Talking about a shovel shortage, Central Illinois. Some news reports out of there. Just want to read this one to you. 708, Walgreens has tons of shovels, Anna, for cheap. Great deal. 847, please ask Anna. I'm amazed that people run out of every year when it snows to get a shovel. What do they do with their shovel from last year? It's an excellent question. Excellent question, Dr. Steve. Do you throw it away like, yeah, I might not need this again. I'll just throw it away. No, we need it again. We live in Chicago, God. Dr. Steve Salzman.
Yes, we do, Anna. Yes, we do.
Hey, but your parents live in Florida, and I want to ask you this. Did you see those? They have people dressing up as grandparents and standing in line for vaccines to try to fool the process, fool everyone. And they've busted a couple of these folks. I mean, get your parents out there to make a citizen's arrest. That's terrible. I think that's terrible.
You hear that, Phil and Rita? Tackle the next culprit you see. Yeah, that's pretty hardcore, no? I mean, like, yikes. Like, and when you get caught, like, what must you feel like? Like, if you're not ready to crawl in a hole and die, then you're not even a human being. I would be mortified.
Right. I mean, my poor mom had so much anxiety about getting the vaccine. She finally got it. I was so thrilled she did. It just, if nothing else, the stress that relieved, that came off of her head, off her shoulders. She was just a different person the next day, and her blood pressure went down. And I'm not kidding you. And so I just felt like, okay, that's, you know, I'm not going to take my mom's turn. Come on.
I know. Well, listen, this is what happens, you know. Panic and fear creates behavior that's sometimes exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, I know. I know we have listener questions to get to, and Dr. Steve always takes those, 312-981-7200. You've been taking those since the pandemic began, as I recall, when Dr. Arwady and Dr. ZK used to step up to the podium and say all this stuff about this coronavirus, this COVID-19, and all these things we didn't know about then, and you were taking all the questions now, and you still take them, and we appreciate you for that, Dr. Steve. Chief Medical Officer.
Rapid fire.
Yeah, I know. You answer them all. Green Care Medical, Green Care CBD, I should say, is your clinic, the place where you work. So we want to get to the air purifier stuff, too, because there's a lot of news out there about people trying to buy air purifiers for their home now more than ever. And I just sort of wonder medically, you know, what you make of these. I mean, we can go through some of them, but I just kind of want to get your sort of overall take on, is that a good thing to get? Do you need one?
So, very interesting. There was this University of Toronto engineering professor, Jeffrey Siegel, who's, by the way, a leading expert on ventilation, filtration, and indoor air quality. Stellar, stellar career. I mean, that sounded terribly exciting. They tested five popular brands, and because the air purifier sales in Canada had jumped 9% in 2020, for obvious reasons. And the goal of these things, obviously, is to help to clear coronavirus particles and reduce the viral load, right? So the majority of the ones that they used have HEPA filters, which is supposed to remove at least 99.97% of dust, pollen, mold, bacteria, and these airborne particles, quote unquote. And so they tested each device. I love this. You're going to love this. They tested each device to see how much air cleaning power it delivered. And they used something called CADR. It's the clean air delivery rate. And so it measures how long an air purifying device takes to remove things like pollen and smoke and dust. And sort of this is the benchmark. It allows consumers sort of to compare the effectiveness of all of these portable air purifiers, you know, because more and more are coming out on the market. They also threw a do-it-yourself version in, which was basically made up of a box fan and a filter taped with painter's tape. $70, no HEPA filter. And they saw, you know, and they ran the whole gamut of tests. The poorest performer was the cheapest product. The one that performed the best actually was the mid-range one. But and by the way, the $70 one performed better than some of the other ones. But the mid-range one was the best. The one that was $800, however, right? It had a lower CADR, that clean air delivery rate. It had a lower CADR reading. But it had this heater and all these bells and whistles. So they interviewed the engineer. And the engineer's answer was, we didn't use CADR, we used the polar test method. And the reporter asks what that is, and he says, it measures the intelligence of the purifier. You remember old wrestling Roddy Piper, when he used to say, just when you think you have all the answers, I change the question? Exactly what this guy did. Just when you use the gold standard test, we change the measured parameters. And I thought it was very cute. You know, next they're going to measure Salzman units. It's terrific. Here's the consensus. The consensus is that air purifiers don't actually offer much protection in most circumstances. If you have a sick patient in the house, you probably want to leave it pretty close to them. Might help protect caregivers, but you have to keep it close to the person, obviously. To be honest, if you opened up the windows and let fresh air in, it would dilute many of the indoor contaminants, including potential viral particles. So, listen, you know, nothing is going to change, and this will, you know, will it give you extra security? Perhaps, but I wouldn't change any of my behavior as a function of having an air purifier.
Okay. But are you're sort of overall a fan of, if you want to get one, that they are doing something for you. They're helping you out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are certain things. They all need the HEPA filters and, you know, buyer beware. Also, do your due diligence. Look into these KDAR readings. And, you know, actually, we should just mention quickly about the UV light, because the article then talks about the UV light stuff. Now, mm-hmm. I want to be very clear. They sell a lot of these UV light products. The UV lights that they use in the hospitals are tremendously effective, but there's a reason why. The reason why is because they are industrial grade and they are left there for a significant period of time. These UV lights that they're selling, the challenge is that you don't need to, they talk about sort of the wavelength, but they never talk about the irradiance, like how much time it takes till you kill the coronavirus. Just because you wave one of those lights over something or leave it over there for a minute, it's probably not going to do much. It works in the hospital, but a lot of the products that you're on the market, again, you know, I think that the majority of them are probably less than effective.
Okay, that's good to know, because you do see so many of those products pop up. It feels like anytime I'm online shopping, something like that will pop up. Maybe it's just me. It's a suggestion that I need to purchase one. I'm like, whoa, I wonder if those things work. But the air filters, back to your point, the HEPA or HEPA? HEPA?
Yeah, I mean, you say HEPA, I say HEPA.
All right, high efficiency particulate air, right, filter. So basically, you're saying, that's kind of what the airlines say they use. So that look for that if you're going to buy one, because that seems like one of the sort of the gold standard. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, anything that's worth its weight in gold in 2021 is going to have that associated with a HEPA filter. And like I said, on top of that, that clean air delivery rate, that KDAR rating, that's another sort of standard that they use to compare them to, you know, one with the other in the industry. But again, buyer beware, and do not change any of your behavior as a function of this. And there, nothing beats opening your window in and letting ventilation in and fresh air, really.
Okay, except it's been really cold. So, but Tuesday, you'll want to open up those windows. You open them all up.
Exactly.
Monday evening.
Okay. Yeah, a little cold right now.
Dr. Steve, I know nothing phases you, but I just want to make sure we're not advocating everyone opens up all their windows and makes it 10 degrees inside their house. I want to get to some of the questions from listeners coming up here and some other things to talk to with Dr. Steve. Oh, we got to get to boosting immunity today. You said you really wanted to give us some advice about that, as we all try to just sort of do what we can to protect ourselves from anything that comes our way. So we'll hit those topics and your questions. 312-981-7200. Your questions for Dr. Steve ahead here on WGN. Can we talk about boosting immunity, Dr. Steve? This is something we've been trying to get to. Please.
Sure. Ready? I know we got tons of questions. Want to sum it up in 3 seconds, Anna? Sleep,
okay.
Exercise, eat well, don't drink or smoke, and have sex. How about that?
Easy enough, I guess. That's all it is. Okay. Well, that boils it down for us. Do we move on, or do you want to elaborate?
I mean, well, sure. I mean, listen, the reality of it is that everybody, I've been screaming about it for a year already. This is the time to reset your living. I am for sure, ladies and gentlemen, I have the last 4 years of my life dedicated to this exact research. Without fail, if you could just sleep 6 to 7 good hours a night and get into that deep stage 4 sleep where you could dream, where your brain resets, where healing occurs, just that one thing alone and resetting patients' brains literally is huge. And the body releases certain proteins, by the way, that helps the immune system only during sleep. Sleep is massively important. And then doing all the other things. You know, you don't change overnight, but get up and walk, right? We talk about our low-intensity cardio. Get up and move. You're not going to change your entire diet overnight, but start with, how about not eat any more chocolate bars at night? You know, perhaps throw in one good meal a day. And it's changing your lifestyle and the way we live. We can talk about all of these things everybody's reading on the internet and vitamin D and vitamin C. No question about it. We can deep dive through it as much as you guys want. I've done it 100 times. Vitamin D and vitamin C and some of the other things, absolutely important. But when we're just getting into things, sleeping, getting up and getting moving, and literally just doing more good than bad is literally the single best thing everybody could do. Stop looking for a quick thing. I'm going to take this pill, that shot, this thing. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's good habits. It's discipline. It's living well. All of these things have to come together to protect you.
And consistency, it sounds like. Your top four. One more time, R.
Oh, what I just yelled out? Oh, yeah. There's my top five. Sleep, exercise, eat well, no smoking and drinking, and have sex.
All right, there you go. That boils it down, and you always do that very well. Hey, Dr. Steve, 847, what if you're in an office space with no windows? Air purifier, yes or no?
Listen, I mean, you know, maybe in that situation, if you could find a reliable one, why not, right? If you can't get any clear air and you're going to be working that, sure, I would give that a shot. As long as, you know, you're not going broke buying that. That doesn't change anything, though, right? Mask, social distancing, blah, blah, blah. Continue the mantra. Nothing changes, but it might help, yes.
Okay. We got a question, 815. Have you ever heard of an infection at the injection site when you get the vaccine, the COVID vaccine?
Anytime you stick a needle into any, you know, place in the human body, there is a potential for introducing organisms and causing, you know, injection site infections. When they do this, they're wearing gloves, they wipe you with alcohol. It should be done in a condition where you should not have to worry about that. Is it possible? Yes. You know what? I know of nobody that's had that. Arm soreness? Yes. Infection? No. Is it possible? Of course it is. Anything's always possible when it comes to injections and sticking a needle in the body. But I would not hold it. You get the vaccine, period.
Okay. Can you get steroid epidurals within 2 days of the vaccine?
Yeah. So, you know, for a guy that's only had about 19 rounds of steroid epidurals, I could speak to this quite authoritatively.
I knew you could.
Yes, it's fine. Listen, you know, I tell everybody the first dose, perhaps more so even the second dose, prepare yourself that you might not feel well for 24 to 48 hours. But 2 days after you're feeling fine, no issues. You're not going to have any issues.
Okay, that's good. Got another question here. How do you, 815 says, how long, I think that's missing, how long do you have to wait to resume blood donations after you're fully vaccinated with the COVID vaccine? How long do you have to wait?
I don't think there's any amount of time that anybody has to wait. You know, I'll check that. But as far as I know, I don't think there's any, let's look into it. But no, I don't think so. There shouldn't be any issue after you get vaccinated to go ahead and give blood.
Okay. I'm trying to find the one about colloid. There it is. Anna, please ask Dr. Steve what he knows about colloidal silver. Can it help with the coronavirus? Ronald in Tinley Park. Thank you.
Ron, you know what I'm going to say, Ron? Colloidal silver, by the way, is a mineral. Silver has zero known function in the body. It's not an essential mineral supplement. The FDA's never approved drugs over the counter, by the way, or prescription containing silver that are taken by mouth. So do not buy that. It has no known use, and the body has no known use for it. It's snake oil. And by the way, if you want to throw away your money, give it to me and I'll give it to a charitable cause.
Oh, I like that offer. 224, for the doctor, I received my first dose of the vaccine 2/15, February 15th. I need to travel for work 3/15. So I'm delaying my second vaccine till after. Is that okay? Do you think I'm safe to fly 3/15?
This is no joke. I would not delay the vaccine. Can you delay the vaccine? Yes. I think you could probably safely delay the vaccine a week or two, maybe a few weeks. But if the person could change things, this is serious. I mean, you know, you flying and stuff, remember, just with one shot, what are you, maybe 50% or not? So you're still rolling the dice and, you know, you're not quote unquote, you know, vaccinated as far as I'm concerned with just one shot. That person, you know, everybody go for your second shot and work your life around it because your life might depend on it.
That's a good way to put it. You know, hey, this is a related question here. 815, hey, Dr. Steve, if I've had COVID and had a strong reaction to that first vaccine dose, do I need to get the second dose? What would you recommend?
I won't even start screaming about that. Everybody gets the full dose, the full Monty. It's two shots. All the data is with two shots. I don't care if that first shot you went into almost a spasm of, like, you know, unbelievable proportions and your immune system is so strong, get the second vaccination. And by the way, when you're going to get the person who said that, when you get that second vaccine, by the way, very good that you had that first reaction. That means you're mounting a fairly good immune response, even though you might have felt pretty crappy. But know that, you know, that person, you're going to need that second one, and line up for it and consider the next 24 or 48 hours after the second dose, potentially you not feeling good, you know. And if you had a strong first reaction, I think you have to expect it again the second one. So prepare for it appropriately.
Is there any differential we should know, or any difference between the first and the second in terms of the chances that it makes you a little more or have more of a reaction?
No. I mean, if we're talking about what have we seen, more people find that the first vaccine that they get is just usually pain in the arm and not what the last listener described. And it's usually the second dose where people have a strong immune response and they feel feverish or chills or just malaise and not feeling good. So it's usually more associated with the second dose, but it could be seen with either dose and both doses.
Okay, good to know. Dr. Steve, have you heard about COVID arm? 847 wants to know, have you heard about COVID arm?
I don't know what COVID arm is, but if it's anything like COVID toes, what's happening is that the virus causes what we call this cytokine storm, this massive inflammatory response, and the body goes haywire to try to knock out the virus and essentially sort of, you know, swallows up itself. And one of the problems or one of the systems that's involved is clotting and blood. And patients are sort of showering these clot to distal extremities, and it's causing that blue discoloration, COVID toes, COVID arm. So more than likely, I think that's what they're talking about. And that's a phenomenon of the virus, one of the many horrible things that the virus has done to people. And, you know, that's no small problem, by the way. Some people have showered clot and, you know, lost limbs, and some nasty stuff has happened, especially if you're immunocompromised and sick. But, yeah, tough stuff.
Yeah, that is tough stuff, because I've heard about numbness and COVID toes, even fingers. People say they wake up and they get numbness in their fingers after, sometimes even months later, after suffering from COVID. Even if they had a mild case, that's what's kind of strange. It doesn't necessarily mean because you had a mild case that it's all over, that these kinds of things have developed. You know, we're kind of laughing at Gwyneth Paltrow because we thought maybe that was an attention-getting move. But she certainly, you know, did have COVID, and she did experience those kind of lingering effects that we're kind of learning more about.
Lots and lots of people are having it. Remember a few months ago, we actually talked about the clinic that they opened up in Europe where they started treating a whole slew of patients with a whole load of post-COVID issues. And most of it we talked about, right? The brain fog and the neuropathy that you were talking about, that kind of nerve pain and the clotting disorders. And all of this stuff is very real stuff. So just because, like you just said, Anna, just because you survive it, kind of hell might be just waiting right around the corner, you know. So this is why everyone's got to take this seriously. You know, all bets are off. So everyone, you know, you can't get cute because you just don't know.
No, can't get cute. I like that. Let's go to the phone. Kate has a question for you. Go ahead, quick. Kate, you're on. Oh, we just lost Kate. I'm sorry. She was waiting for a while. I'm sorry. But let's ask you another question from the text line here. Ask the doctor how much vitamin C and D I really need. What should I take?
So that's a million-dollar question. So
yeah,
the answer with let's talk about vitamin D, because the vitamin D really, vitamin D deficiency is sort of a global problem, and it's been very sort of highly identified here with COVID-19. And they're seeing that high-dose vitamin D supplementation particularly for like at-risk groups is theorized to help sort of prevention and treatment. So they used to say like 600 to 800 IUs, but now there's up to 10,000 IUs is considered safe. So if you're already on the supplement, you'd increase the dose twofold, you know, like 4 to 10,000 IUs, and like for a month and a half, and then you'd want to check somebody's levels. if you've never taken it before without prior supplementation, you know, if you're at high risk, I would say go high, like 6,000 to 8,000, and maybe 4,000 if you're not sick, you just want to be careful as a sort of maintenance or, you know, just normal supplementation dose. I do 4,000 I use. But, you know, you got to check levels if you're really concerned. And in terms of vitamin C, I don't know if there's a right answer. I usually take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. And that's really, you know, the two big ones is vitamin C and vitamin D. And yes, everyone's going to talk about, well, what about turmeric and all of these other things? Yes, there's tons of them. And we could talk about it in the future. And Dawn probably talk about it way better than myself about, you know, eating well and what your plate should look like and the color of your plate. Because if you just have a balanced diet, you will take all this stuff in and won't need anything except some sunshine 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah, Dawn Jackson-Blattner, she does talk about foods that kind of help you, you know, just to try to eat a healthy diet, if that's one of the things we can control, right? So she's, and you know, she's somebody who's advised us on the past, but vitamin levels for C and D and different ones of intake, maybe it's something for us to talk about next week. You know,
let's ask her a question. Half plate with veggies and fruit and the rest with protein-rich foods. Comments. Let's see what she thinks.
I'll ask her. And then we can dig in the vitamin stuff, too. I mean, there's so much to get to. We got more questions here. We'll save some of those and then take more questions. Can you join us on Monday, Dr. Steve? Not to put you
of
on the spot.
Of course. But, I'll see everybody on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend and no snow. Please, God, no more snow.
No. When we see you next or talk to you next, hopefully we'll be a lot warmer, too. Thanks, Dr. Steve. Have a good weekend, okay?
You too. Bye.